Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journeys.
My relationship with them is very similar to a supportive venture capitalist relationship. So as I said, it's a very hands-on relationship, very close relationship, critical friend is one of the ways it's been described. Venture capitalist, private equity firm would go through very thorough, looking at every aspect of the organisation, quite testing. So it is a very engaged relationship. And if people are just looking for the money, then venture philanthropy isn't the right partner for them.
I'm very pleased today to introduce Stephen Dawson, a pioneer in the field of venture philanthropy in the UK. A former venture capitalist, Stephen was involved for 25 years with ECI, where he was until recently non-executive chairman. Stephen was co-founder of Impetus Trust, now Impetus PEF, the first British venture philanthropy company, which invests in charities and social enterprises that fight economic disadvantage. He was also a founder trustee of the European Venture Philanthropy Association. Stephen is also co-founder of Jacana Venture Partnership, which aims to tackle poverty in Africa by helping build a venture capital industry. He has received many awards for his work and was awarded an OBB for services to the voluntary sector in 2011. Thank you very much, Stephen, for taking the time today to speak to inspiring social entrepreneurs, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about your career?
Yes, most of my career has been in the venture capital and private equity industries in the UK. I ran a firm called ECI Partners, which specialises in mid-market buyout transactions. I retired from my executive role there in 2002-3. I later became a non-executive chairman, so I stayed involved in that sector until quite recently. And when I was thinking about what I would do when I retired from that sort of role, I wanted to do something in the social sector. I was fortunate in that I didn't need to work for a living and could actually give money away as well as giving my time away. But I had no experience in the charity sector. The only thing really that was driving me was that I was keen to make the maximum impact with my time and my money. So fortunately, I had quite a bit of time before I retired thinking about what I would do, talking to a lot of people, looking on the internet, reading, and trying to find somewhere where I could add value. And in the course of those searches, I came across venture philanthropy, which had been going for a few years in the US. It had mixed reviews. It was quite closely associated with many people's minds with the dot-com boom. And at the time I was looking, that turned into bust. So a lot of people from the more traditional philanthropic world were saying, well, these smart-ass people coming from the business world thinking they know better than we do in the charity sector. We've been in this all our lives and see what happens. They can't even run a business successfully. So there's quite a backlash against this, and we were very conscious of that when we set up Impetus, that we should not be seen as a competitor in some way to the social sector, but work very closely with it. And I think that's something we did pretty successfully. So when I realised that this was a suitable model where people like me were able to contribute, to add value, I looked around to see who was doing something like this in the UK or even in Europe, and nobody was. So that's when I decided to set up Impetus.
Right, very timely. Can you tell me a little bit about Impetus and its early years?
Yes, well, perhaps just to say a little bit about what venture philanthropy is, and I will, in the various comments I make, I will draw heavily on Impetus PEF as it now is, because that's where I have, that's the example I know best. But venture philanthropy is a package of support for small, ambitious charities who are keen to scale up. And it is based very heavily on venture capital and private equity methods, which is why I felt I could add value. So the three elements: long-term strategic funding, funding for the infrastructure of the organisation, hands-on support from the Impetus team, who are now very experienced in the sort of issues that these small, ambitious charities face. And then the third element is pro bono projects. So we bring in a range of consultants, experts in particular fields, who work for the charities, typically 3-4 projects a year, and they work very high caliber people working on a pro bono basis. So that's a definition of venture philanthropy generally. And just to sort of finish off on venture philanthropy before turning to impetus, it has become a worldwide movement over the last 15 years or so. So it's obviously started in the US and is strong over there. It's developed strongly in Europe and in Asia. And I was involved in setting up the European Venture Philanthropy Association. Some of the people involved in that have also set up the Asian Venture Philanthropy Network. And those two organizations combined have over 450 members. And there are plans to set up in Africa and South America. So it is very much a worldwide movement. To turn to impetus, we have been through quite an evolution over the last 15 years. We now focus exclusively on the UK and in a very defined area, dealing with disadvantaged young people, helping them to get the best possible outcome from their education and improving the best, giving them the best chances of being ready for work. So that's, as I say, very focused, and it is very much that package that I've talked about, the long-term strategic funding, hands-on support, and pro bono projects.
Right, right. That's interesting. Now, where do profits fit in?
Well, I think it'd be good to talk about social investments, and it's very closely related to venture philanthropy. But just sticking to venture philanthropy, venture philanthropy is a very broad, we call it a broad church in the European Venture Philanthropy Association. So we do try and encompass a whole range of different techniques and different methods of investment. As I've implied, that, you know, in Europe, for example, it many different approaches, many different countries taking different approaches. So some of those do include a return for the investors, for the donors, if you like. The model that Impetus has chosen to adopt does not. So our model is purely philanthropic. So yeah, we ask people for donations, and the investment side is really how we work with organizations. We're dealing with them, where our relationship with them is very similar to a supportive venture capitalist relationship. So as I said, it's a very hands-on relationship, very close relationship. Critical friend is one of the ways it's been described. But in the case of Impetus PEF, it is a purely philanthropic relationship rather than one where we or our investors are looking for any sort of return.
Right, right. Could you maybe talk about a few projects that you've been involved in, or maybe one or two, you know, briefly, to give us a sense of maybe a trajectory and characteristics of a project?
Yes. One of the projects that I particularly like, which I think is a good example of the sort of work we do, and we have been working with them for quite a long time, so I think it does sort of illustrate the phases in relationship. So one of the charities we work with is called Into University, and it does pretty well what it says on the tin. So it helps disadvantaged young people who wouldn't have dreamt of going to university, helps them to get to university or some equivalent tertiary education. When we started working with them, they're in a small church hall in a disadvantaged part of London, with income of under £250,000 a year. They were serving, I think it was about 800 young people going through their programs. They're now serving about 20,000 young people from about 20 centres around the UK. They have partnerships with various universities that they just set up recently in Bristol, which is a partnership between Bristol, Exeter and Bath universities. So, you know, evolved enormously, and obviously the organisation has grown, the structure has grown, and we feel very proud of that relationship. We've provided we've been working with them for probably 8-9 years now, and we've provided them with a package of support amounting to the order of £1 million over the first 5 years, which included the value of the time, the expertise that we've provided through our pro bono experts and our team. And we've committed to another 5 years of similar amounts of funding and support. So I think that's a good example of what we're trying to achieve. Clearly not all of them will be that successful. That's certainly been a huge success.
Great story, great success, as you say. Talking to, you know, the social innovators, the social entrepreneurs, finding money at an early stage of development to support your, you know, the growth of the organization is acutely challenging. There must be an endless demand for, you know, for venture philanthropy of the kind that you provide, which is, you know, that support and investment, which isn't looking for financial returns and so forth.
Yes, there certainly is. And I think it's one of the challenges we face is to manage expectations so that people who are looking to work with us this is very much a two-way relationship. So often we will approach an organization that we think fits our criteria and try and persuade them to work with us. So it could be either way. But when we approach them, we do make it very clear that this isn't for everybody. And I think one of the very positive things about the structure of charities in the UK is there's a huge number of very small organisations, and people say, oh, that must be very inefficient. No, they're in many ways, they're the most efficient because they're serving some local cause. They are based in the community where they operate. The trustees, donors, workers are often the same people, often no paid employees. So very cost effective. And the last thing they should do is try and scale up. So we are looking for the ones who have a proven model, who want to scale up. You know, this isn't going to work unless they're very committed to this. It's, you know, there's a lot of commitment involved. And so I think, you know, this is what is right for the organization, for the social entrepreneur. They have to be ambitious. They have to recognize that they do need help in some areas. They have to welcome quite an intrusive process. We go through a due diligence process very much like a venture capitalist, private equity firm would go through, very thorough, looking at every aspect of the organization, quite testing. So it is a very engaged relationship. And if people are just looking for the money, then venture philanthropy isn't the right partner for them.
Right, right. That's very interesting. How do the social entrepreneurs find the process? What are some of the, you know, areas where maybe that some could further develop things that they might, insights about how to approach presenting their case and thinking about that?
I think they've all found it challenging, but they've also said, yeah, probably the best test is the ones where in the end it hasn't gone forward, either because they've decided it's not for them, or more often we've decided that they don't fit after doing, you know, quite a lot of analysis work. And the feedback we've had from those is, yeah, very sorry it didn't go further, but it was an extremely valuable process. You've asked us questions that other people hadn't asked. You really made us think about what we're doing, who we're trying to serve, and how we can do that more effectively. So I think it is a positive experience, even at that sort of beginning. And we do regularly test the feedback from those who have been through the whole process. And again, that's pretty universally a very positive experience. One of the problems in the philanthropic funding world is that many funders are very narrow in their criteria. And charities, social enterprises looking for funding get used to, perhaps in some cases, contorting what they're doing to fit into those criteria. And so it becomes a bit of a dance. And the same applies, you know, when they have the funding, I have to report on in ways that perhaps don't naturally fit with what the way they normally look at things. So we are very different from that. We look at the organization, warts and all, and, you know, if there are weaknesses, that's, you know, fine, as long as they're not terminal, because that's what we do. We try and, you know, build on the strengths and try and work on the weaknesses to improve against the weaknesses. So it's a very open relationship. We want to hear absolutely about the problems. We want to hear absolutely about their frustrations, about what we can do to help, to make them more effective, to make them put them in a position to grow more rapidly. So I think that's perhaps the most important thing that I would say to social entrepreneurs looking for venture philanthropy funding. Be open, you know, sell your organization, be positive about it, be enthusiastic about it. That's vital. but don't cover up some of the areas where there are weaknesses, where there is room for improvement. Because you know, if you're absolutely perfect, then you don't need venture philanthropy.
Right. Right, that's interesting. The question of profits is an interesting one, I think, in the social sector. Clearly, one of the potential advantages of social entrepreneurial business models is at least making some kind of revenues and being perhaps more sustainable in the longer term, more independent in that way. Clearly, not every situation has the potential for profits. How do you look at that question in terms of the, you know, revenue side of social innovation with respect to sustaining organizations to create change?
Sustainability is absolutely crucial. It's fundamental. When we're looking at an organization, it's one of the first questions we ask. Is this organization sustainable? If there are doubts about that, if there are vulnerabilities, how can we make it more sustainable over the course of our, say, 5-year relationship with them? If there is a source of earned income, that's great. And we, many of the projects we get involved in center around assessing and then developing, building that earned income activity, that social enterprise activity, if you like, within a purely charitable organization dependent on donations and grants. So I think it is very, it's an absolutely crucial area for our work. But there are some where it's just impossible to find that source of earned income. And, we've had quite a number of charities we've worked with who've been searching for that, looking for that holy grail, and weren't able to find it. Well, that's okay. As long as there are other sources of funding that provide that sustainability, and probably the key to that is a spread. So being totally dependent on government contracts, for example, is a pretty vulnerable place to be. Being dependent on a very small number of private individuals or foundations, trusts and foundations to fund you equally, that's not healthy. So having a spread of maybe a mix of those different types of funder is one of the crucial things we try and develop over the course of our relationship.
Right, that's interesting. More and more people I speak to talk about this kind of hybrid form where they're getting different kinds of capital from different sources, which again also can increase the challenges they have to manage, not least within an organization where they may have different kinds of values and talk about their work in different ways.
Yes, I think that cultural challenge is really important, and recognizing that this is a different type of management challenge. I'm a trustee of a charity that is called Sanitation First, which again does roughly what it says on the tin. So we provide sanitation in India and Africa, and we are working on a social enterprise, which is basically selling, converting the waste that is produced into a very high quality compost. And so that's obviously a social enterprise. And we're very enthusiastic about that. We think that has the potential to pay for the installation of the toilets. But we'd also recognise this needs very different business skills. We brought in a guy who had a couple of months on sabbatical from McKinsey to help us on the business plan. And we're very much looking for commercial people to help us in the implementation of that. But as you say, the cultural challenge can be a very difficult one for charities that are very much from a charitable background, if you like, because it does need very different skills, very different personalities in some cases, to really look for those business opportunities and develop them most effectively. And that's often a cause of friction, often a cause of great disappointment when these fantastic looking ideas and fantastic looking individuals who are meant to be driving them actually don't work out.
Yeah, it's just another layer of complexity to already challenging situation for many social innovators. What would you say are some of the causes where your venture philanthropy isn't suitable?
I think it's very widely applicable. It's been great to see organisations like the European Venture Philanthropy Association and the huge variety of models and of sectors that are covered in that organisation. So it's, a lot of them are domestic, quite focused, as Impetus PEF is, but quite a lot operate internationally, a whole range of different sectors that are covered. I think the most difficult area is where it's very long term in its impact, and perhaps very hard to measure that impact. So an example of that would be a campaigning organization. So if you're working on, it might be a range of issues, but you know, a particular area of campaigning, of social issues that you're trying to change policy in, it's very long term. It's very hard to attribute causality. You know, there's been a change in the legislation on whatever it is. Was that because you were doing this? Was that because it was going to change anyway? Extremely difficult to measure impact. And one of the key features of venture philanthropy is very robust impact measurement. Again, it's the background of the individuals from venture capital, private equity industry, very keen on making sure that a particular model is successful, testing it against alternative models. So impact assessment is absolutely a crucial part of what we do. If you can't do that, it means venture philanthropy is quite hard to apply.
Right. That's very interesting. I just wonder, and again, having talked to several social entrepreneurs about the challenge of a pilot scheme of showing the case, proving the case for their work and the impact that they have. I don't know whether you could talk a little bit about that and any insights you have, because it does seem to be a particular hurdle and one that, you know, organizations need to deal with if they're going to raise certain kinds of funds.
I guess we generally get involved when there has been a pilot scheme. We don't get involved with startups. They are typically, say, £250,000 income when we first get involved, maybe £500,000, maybe more than that. And the smaller the organisation, the more work we need to do to build a foundation. So we want organisations that have got some reasonable infrastructure to work with. So the pilot stage is absolutely vital. And that's what we will be looking at when we're assessing the model, the business model, if you like, of the organisation. And we're not looking for perfection at that stage. We're looking for reasonable evidence that the model is working, that it is having an impact, that it does what the organisation is set up to do. It's remarkable how often you go along to an organisation, ask them what they do, and they say, well, we serve young people with a particular social issue. You then look at their work and they've drifted a long way away from that original starting point. So I think that's really important that the pilot is bang on mission, that it does really demonstrate that the core of what they're trying to, the problem they're trying to solve is being solved, and that there is evidence that this is a sustainable model, this is a scalable model. So I think a lot hangs on that pilot. It's not, it's the beginning of the story. It's a long way to go, but it is an absolutely vital step.
Right, it's fascinating. What about the impact side of things, briefly, if you have any insights into that? As you say, there's some situations where it's clearly very difficult to attribute impact. More generally, have you any insights or advice, given the number of entrepreneurs that you've spoken to on this journey and the number of projects you've looked at?
I think it is a very overused word. It's the right word, but people use it in very different ways and abuse it. And government, for example, talks a huge amount about impact and is very demanding in terms of the impact measurement it looks for in the organisations it provides funding to or gives contracts to increasingly these days. But I think it's something we've, as I say, focused on. It's a fundamental part of venture philanthropy. But in the last few years, I think we've raised our game from what was already silver standard to gold standard. And I think we've realised just how few of the organisations who really do apply that gold standard. It is, as I say, it's a very rigorous process. It goes back to some very basic questions about why the organisation exists, who they're trying to help, how they will know whether they've succeeded, how that is attributable to their work as opposed to some other factor that was just carrying them like boats on a tide. So It is vital. It is very easy to underestimate the difficulty of doing it in a robust fashion. It's one of the first things we work on with every organization we come across, and it's surprising how difficult they find that, but also how vulnerable they find that, being asked those very basic questions. We did this on ourselves, yeah, before we imposed this on other people. We went through this process ourselves. We were surprised and somewhat shocked by what came out of that process, and I think I would recommend it to anybody to go through that very rigorous theory of change or driving impact process, which we do.
Excellent. You mentioned an interesting perspective, which runs contrary to some that you hear in terms of the number of smaller organizations, startups and little social enterprises and so forth, and that brings benefits. In some areas, there's a proliferation of organizations dealing with the same problem in different ways or not. You know, if you look at cancer, for example, you may find there's hundreds and hundreds of different organizations, and maybe not all of them are actually doing things in a different way. And I'm just wondering, in general, how well you think social entrepreneurs partner or manage to learn and get insights from others working in very similar areas to them, working with similar kinds of problems or similar targets.
I think it is a weakness in the social sector, and business people coming into the charity world often are the worst culprits. They don't do their due diligence. They don't have a thorough look around as to who is doing something in the area that they want to get involved in and set something up, reinvent the wheel when there's a perfectly good organisation there already. So I think there is an issue there. But yes, as you say, there are also a huge number of niches as there are in the business world. And the fact that from the outside you may seem to be doing something very similar to somebody else doesn't mean that it is identical. I think one of the biggest problems in the social sector is the difficulty of mergers. We've been through a merger. Impetus is now Impetus PEF. So we merged 3 years ago with the Private Equity Foundation. And it was something we've been talking about for years and years. But generally, it's incredibly difficult because you have a group of trustees who aren't paid, and so you can't pay them off. They often have great loyalty to their chief executive, and so you can't have two chief executives, which one is going to be the chief executive in the combined organisation. So there are much greater barriers to mergers than there are in the corporate world, where money solves a huge number of problems. But there is a need for it, and I think every organisation should ask itself, should we be cooperating? Should we be have some long-term partnership? Should we share back-office functions, which can be a huge source of savings? Should we merge? And I think it is a duty to look at that and say, yes, there's this organisation down the road. We have some differences, but if we put these organisations together, we would save on some costs. We would have a greater impact. We might be better at fundraising. There are all sorts of ways in which there could be a benefit from merger. And I think more organizations should look at that.
Now, social entrepreneurship has evolved, and it's one way of describing, I guess, this kind of social innovation. And how do you see this area evolving now?
I think it has evolved enormously. I've been involved in the sector for, I'd say, of the order of 15 years, and I've seen enormous change over that time. I think probably the biggest change in terms of social entrepreneurs is more people coming from the business world. That doesn't mean business is better, but there is a set of skills that those people bring. If they can be combined with empathy with the cause, with the knowledge and experience that people in the charity sector have about how to solve social problems, I think that's a very powerful combination. So social entrepreneurs becoming chief executives of organizations, founding organizations, donors, venture philanthropists, there's a whole raft of intermediaries that have sprung up, providing advice, providing support of one sort or another for charities, for funders, to improve the impact of funding to improve the performance of the social sector organisations. So I think that has been a huge change over the last 15 years, and I don't see that slowing up over the next 10, 15 years. I think the other big change I'd mention is the role of government. Government is the biggest single funder by a long way. It's 30-40% of the social sector funding. Government is under huge pressure around the world, but particularly in the UK, to be more efficient, to save money, to achieve more with less. So techniques like venture philanthropy are extremely valuable when you're trying to do that. There are a lot of that is about efficiency and effectiveness, but also some of the newer techniques that have come along, things like social investment, social impact bonds, particularly, I think are very relevant to government funding. And it's a great sort of win-win situation from government's point of view, because the social sector takes most of the risk and the government only pays when the impact is at a certain level. So I think that's something that will become much more widespread. And as I say, the professionalisation of the social sector, I think, is the other trend that has been very evident over the last 10, 15 years and will continue to be a very strong force in the future.
And venture philanthropy, what do you see there?
I think it's, as I say, it is a worldwide phenomenon, and it's not yet in every continent, but I see that happening over the next 10, 15 years. And it will be very different in Africa and South America. It's very different in developing countries compared with more established economies. But I think the great benefit of working in those sort of areas is that your money goes so much further. So you can achieve a huge amount with relatively small amounts of money. I think a lot of, in those areas, I think it would be very much a social investment model because there isn't the philanthropic infrastructure for charities and more traditional social enterprises to thrive and to obtain funding. So I think those are elements of venture philanthropy which will be extremely important. And I see it, social investment we talked about a little bit, which I think is a really important trend. But if a government, for example, is looking for an organisation to deliver a social impact bond, it needs a robust organisation. It needs an organisation that's very good at measuring impact, because that's what social impact bonds are all about. So it needs, in many cases, a venture philanthropy partner to bring that organisation to be investment ready, so that it can benefit from a social impact bond, it can deliver a social impact bond. So I think there's social investment and venture philanthropy go absolutely hand in hand, and see that being another major trend over the next few years.
Fantastic. I was going to ask you the last question, but I just should ask for clarification. When you say social investment, what does that comprise? How do you see that?
I think it is an investment which achieves both social and financial returns. And there's a spectrum from very small financial return to a fully commercial financial return, and different organisations at different points on that spectrum and progress along that spectrum generally in the direction of more financial return, not at the expense of the social return, but being able to develop the model to a point where it can make good surpluses. And Sanitation First, I mentioned that I'm a trustee of, is a good example of that. It, to date, has been purely philanthropic, but we see ourselves moving much more in the direction of being a social investment or impact investment organisation. So I think it is a very powerful technique. It's a very flexible technique. But again, one I can see growing very much over the next decade.
That's been brilliant, Stephen. I really appreciated you taking the time. It's been fascinating to talk to you about this. And what about you, Stephen? Where's your interest at the moment? You're not involved anymore, I take it, in Impetus PEF. Where are you focusing and what are your plans?
I am still a trustee of Impetus PEF. So as I said, we went through a merger 3 years ago, and I thought it was important to see that through. It's now working very well. We have a new chief executive who's just joined us very recently, so I could certainly see myself stepping down from that in the not too distant future. But as I also mentioned, I've become a trustee of Sanitation First, so that's become a big part of what I'm doing at the moment. It's at the sort of stage where Impetus might have got involved. So it's a relatively small organisation, but with a model that we believe is very exciting. There's potential for earned income is great. We're really able to demonstrate our social impact. So it's a very exciting position. There's a lot of work to be done internally to get our structures and processes and people, you know, the right people in the right jobs. But I see that as being a very exciting organisation to be involved in.
Well, I wish you the very best of success with that, Stephen. And thank you so much for sharing your insights and expertise on inspiring social entrepreneurs today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.